glad everybody could come in and give their perspective. I hope everybody had a chance to go over what I sent. So I'm Kevin Ross from Radio Facts. I want everybody else to introduce themselves.
I'm the poetess from Los Angeles. I'm a hundred. Everyone calls me Jan. I have my own marketing and management firm, the Lewis Cortez Group, and I'm a former programmer.
Oh, okay. Welcome.
Thank you.
You too.
I was so short and brief. I'm a radio producer and broadcast.
I'm Dwayne McClary. I'm a consultant to Epic Records, Def Jam Records, Cash Money Records, amongst others. And previously I was at MCA Records, Geffen Records, and Universal Motown Records.
And I'm Paul Porter, old radio head from Boston, New York, D.C. Worked at BET, worked at different places, and now I'm a rebel with a different cause and have a website, rebrehab.com.
All right. Great. So let's get to it. First subject, which I thought was very interesting, and Paul brought it up, was Lord. And I actually, after 4 months on the pop charts, taking over the number one spot at Urban Radio. And I, the content of the song is what interests me, but I wanted to get Paul, your perspective first as to why you think that happened.
Well, I mean, it, to me, it's quite different. I've been tracking records since the inception of BDS and SoundScan, and I've kept everyone, and it's just a different day now where a record that goes pop first months ahead of it, the time it gets spinning on Urban goes to Urban Radio. It turns out to be a number one record, and the content in the record is basically poking fun at, a lot of the things, the elements of urban or black radio today. So I thought it was different, the content of the record and how it happened, and especially since the Macklemore record during this Grammys time won Grammys, but didn't get black radio spins with Lord being, a 15-year-old or 14-year-old when she recorded the record, surging to the top. So I thought it would be a good part of the discussion on why not.
I'll chime in and just say that, sometimes, unfortunately, we all know too well that these things sometimes are mandated from the top. Because my question always becomes, why choose a Lord to play on urban radio in the United States when you have so many talented artists within the United States that you could be supporting,
right,
as opposed to international artists, where their music tastes are vastly different than ours. They're a little more open, they're a little more lyrically free, but at the end of the day, we have to play hours, but not enough to support the local artists. So, sometimes those things can come down and we just don't know it.
Well, my main concern was that would be considered a conscious record in rap or hip-hop that black radio has eluded for over a decade. There's tons of artists that have positive messages, messages of uplift, and it's strange that the balance gets changed with an international young white girl from another country for a record that went pop, that played in every market, that played in black radio. So it really shows what Felicia meant, the powers that be said make it happen.
Question I have, when we talk about programming, urban programming, you look at the situation in Atlanta where V103 for the first time is having some issues. Now, Jamila, you're there. What do you think of the competition? There's like five stations, right?
It is. It's a lot. Actually, I've got to really count. It's probably more than that because you've got V103, you've got Street, you've got Radio 1, there are two stations, you've got Cox. I think in Atlanta, honestly, let me just first say that this is one of my favorite markets, which is why I'm based here now. Always loved Atlanta, always loved the Atlanta radio. The battle right now, I would say, is a very interesting one because you have teams that are basically playing offense and defense. You've got Reggie Rouse's station, who is holding on and trying to hold, their position, but yet still expand so that they can have a great market share. You've got Sweet Head and Good, who's going in from where they're old school, where he's pulling kids off the street, giving them pizza, and they're the focus group to help drive the music on the station. I mean, he's paying attention to a lot of those folks. You've got Radio 1 in there, who's definitely taking a big piece of the share. So it's a very healthy battle, which is something that I personally love to watch because competition
Yeah,
Dwayne. Can I ask a question on this topic?
Yeah.
I haven't been on terrestrial radio for a couple of years, but when I was on terrestrial radio, there was a time where requests made a difference and was paid attention to. But I just feel like now that radio is so corporate now, and they're making these deals with these record companies. It really doesn't matter what the people want. It's based on the deals that the radio companies are making with these corporations with this music. Because there was a time where there was a lot of community input, request line was important, and things like that. But I think that from what I've seen so far, that radio has gotten away from that.
I was saying, and piggyback to what Felicia was saying, that I think the really good programmers, the really great ones, still pay attention to request line and still pay attention to what's being played in the clubs and still pay attention to what's going on in their streets. You do have some lazy programmers who are not going to put in that time and not going to put in that extra work because they don't care that much. They're just programming in a structure or maybe, you know, taking what's coming down from one person and saying, okay, if they're doing it, then I'm going to do this and it must be high. But it definitely requires a little bit of effort, a little bit of care about your community and about your station and about the functionality of your station to actually really input what people are saying and what they want and then helping to make those things bigger on the air, even if they don't come down from, you know, your quote-unquote your corporate structure.
Don't you think it's a real small percentage of people that can do what they want in their markets these days?
Yes.
It is. It definitely is a real small percentage, and it's an even
smaller percentage of people that aren't willing to speak up and say,
oh, yeah.
I want to do this.
Yeah.
I also noticed, too, when I was on the air, that they took the freedom of choice away from mix show DJs as well. There was a time where mix show DJs broke a lot of records and they were able to play what was hot in the streets and what was hot in the club, but it got to the point where they had to play what was on the station's playlist. They were restricted to that.
Right. I can say that although that was a good idea, I mean, although having mix shows was the street for, let's say, you know, the sound of your station, those are the people who were coming in and telling you what's really happening. Unfortunately, you have some mix show DJs who make more than programmers, and so therefore they have to possibly be disciplined. That's more than likely where that came in.
Or I was going to say, or real then. But you know what, Jamila? I don't know. I'm sure that you and Paul and the poetess remember this. There was a time when mix show DJs were completely ignored. It's like they were the stepchildren of the station.
Absolutely.
So it was actually brilliant on their behalf to come up with their own industry. They had no choice.
Agree with that, but here's now the problem. Now you have some of them who they want to be artists too, and then they're making more than some programmers are making, and so you have to still mandate and protect your license.
Yeah.
And you have to still make sure that you're getting, you know, a fair list that's
going to
come down from them.
But even then, how fair is that? Because when you look at like the EDM market, for example, you got DJs out there making millions. I mean, more than celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it wrong for a DJ, a black DJ, to make more than a PD?
I don't think it's wrong, but I think you just have to, as a programmer, a mix show is a staff member.
Oh, I got what you're saying.
That's just under the programmer.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, you're still responsible.
They're programming their own shows.
Everything that they're carrying on, absolutely.
Right, all that other stuff comes in. I got you.
That's all I'm saying, to stop them or, you know, tear down their hustle. But it's coming under your leadership.
You're under scrutiny, so, yeah.
Yeah, you got to make sure that they're not out there having you look crazy.
Right. Now, let's move to another subject real quick. Let's talk about the Grammys. Really hot subject this week has been, two subjects. Macklemore over Kendrick Lamar and also the India Arie's open letter. What do you think about the Macklemore's win over Kendrick Lamar? Do you think that was? I think it was somewhat political, but what do you think?
Okay, I'll go first.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and I'm probably going to get some flack on this, but I think that Macklemore, who is an independent artist, versus Kendrick Lamar, who was signed to Interscope, who we know has Interscope, let's just put it that way, okay? Mm-hmm. Macklemore has sold three times more records than Kendrick Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
So would we actually say that it's unfair? Because at the end of the day, I don't know if you guys know, but Thrift Shop sold 7.3 million singles,
mm-hmm.
digital downloads.
Mm-hmm.
7.3 million compared to Kendrick's 1.7 million.
Paul, what do you think about that?
First of all, I have to say, Jamela, I love you to death. I've watched your career and respect you, but Macklemore is not an indie. They haven't been an indie.
Okay, who is he tied to?
ADA. ADA is on the 24th floor of the Warner Music Group. They were bought by Warner Atlantic in the early 90s. I've never in the history of my life seen an independent record go pop, and I've heard the stories of this and that, but we all know the cost of breaking a record nationally, and to say Macklemore's independent, even though they talk the organic stuff, if you look, and there's a story on RapRehab.com I did last year, if you look on BDS or SoundScan, their first single, Same Love, they got no airplay, very little, they were independent. Thrift Shop is Warner Music Group, ADA. So let's not get it confused. They had the big money and the big dollars of Atlantic and promotion to make that record happen. Because I think a lot of folks are confused and they think you can walk into a radio station and get play in, you know, the 200 markets. It's not going to happen without a major. I've never seen
it. No, I get that. I have just never seen that label. And every, even on iTunes, I mean, they, it's still that they're independently released. So
ADA is part of Warner Music Group. Yeah, no.
Okay.
They were bought. They are in the building. I do business in the building. And they have an office and a huge budget.
And I'm reading right now that the Grammy Awards are supposed to, they have a body that votes on these records based on quality and not the sales of the record. So are these awards given out based on people's opinions, or is it political, or what?
When you think about it, what black rapper would have done a song and let the 30 straight and gay couples get married while they did the song on the Grammys? Maybe Kanye, but he would have gotten so much flack for it. And I did a piece in Radio Facts, and I said that I think that it is retribution for the extreme homophobia in the black hip-hop community.
Mm-hmm. So do you believe that has something to do with him winning
yes.
Grammy over?
That's why I say it's political, yeah. Because if
I am reading right now online that he's distributed by AMA, who's owned by Warner, but he has his own label. So let me just stay corrected and say that he's distributed
by AMA. Everybody has their own labels at majors. I mean, that's not the truth.
Not everybody,
a lot of people.
I had an open question. How are we defining hip-hop in this day and age, though? You know what I mean? It seems like they flipped the whole meaning of the music, the culture. Hip hop the same as it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago? I mean, because I don't know. I just feel like people have changed the definition of hip hop, and because I don't think Nicki Minaj or people like that are hip hop. I think they're pop. So have we changed that genre?
Well, I mean, you also have to consider that we're older now. So, and the music industry is a youth-driven industry. So it's based on whatever's happening. So we also have to ask yourself, have you just lost your taste do you not have the taste for today's music? Is that fair?
No, I disagree with that because hip-hop originally was based on the beat, the lyrics, the consciousness of the lyrics, the lifestyle, the culture. And I don't really see that anymore in terms of seeing it in a mainstream. But there's still an underground culture that,
you know, define hip hop in its original sense.
Are we not allowing the industry to constantly change? I mean, it has to do that, right?
It has to do that, but I think they're categorizing some of this music in the wrong. But I agree with you. Rap is rap. Rap doesn't necessarily have to be hip hop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it could be pop rap.
I want to ask another question about. I'll go back to Atlanta real quick and ask Jamila a question. Steve Hegwood is doing something very different. And I interviewed him in Radio Facts, and we talked about how he's definitely going after that 18 to 34, which is what's hurting V103. If we were all programmers at a station, and you had somebody that was stable for 14 years, and this is not a dig on Reggie, but I'm just saying, we have a show that's solid for 14 years straight. Would you allow that show to change in a market that has where you have four or five other competitors?
You know, if he was winning, I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah.
You know, so if he's winning, you don't change your winning formula. However, there are different reasons as to why people leave stations, and it may not have anything to do with, you know, his ratings on the air. I don't know that. However, in terms of Brian Hanlon, I do know that from what I understand, they have just rehired Wanda back.
They did.
And so my assumption is that, okay, they made a change. They thought it was going to work. It could have been budgetary. It could have been, you know, just a first choice. I'm not really sure. But, okay, go back and fix it. If it's still not right, if it's still not working, if it's still not happening and not getting ratings, then yeah.
And that brings me to the next question. If a young person came up to you today, all of us, and they told you they wanted to get into radio, what would each one of you tell them?
I would tell them to consider new media and internet and all this other, because a lot of people, millions of people are turning to internet streaming for their radio entertainment. So I would definitely encourage them to look into new media.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio from RadioFacts.com.
Because it's the same 10 songs. I feel like a lot of the DJs on the air right now don't really know the music that they're playing too well, or they don't have anything much to say to the community.
Yeah, but they're police.
With the internet.
Yeah.
With the internet and various, you know, radio programs, even on SiriusXM, there's more of a variety, more of a sense of freedom on those outlets. So I would definitely direct them to the new media of radio.
Paul?
Personally, I've said the same thing for over 10 years. It all depends what the talents are. I mean, in terms of radio, I love radio and I'll love it forever, but it's not the financially stable job that it used to be, and it's only going to get worse. And you got to have a lot of different things going along with it to make a good living. The days of the union shops and the big salaries, like Jamila's there in Atlanta, and they pay the most money. I bet you the V103 staff is one of the highest paid staffs in the country by far when it comes to urban.
And service, service broadcasting.
And I know Jamila dealt with payroll for part-time is at Radio 1, which was slave labor.
Being the gatekeepers and then being a part of the community and knowing, you know, how to
how to raise the perception and the visibility of your station and marketing. So I think that that person needs to be so well-rounded that there are people out there who have that talent. And, you know, there's good opportunities, but at the end of the day, you have to know all of them, not some of them. Because if you're just good on music and you can't manage up, then you're going to be unhappy. Or, you know, if you're good on social media and know on the street, but you can't survive in a corporate structure, it's going to be very difficult. So you have to be a little more well-rounded than when maybe we started in radio, where it was the love of music, it was the love of community, it was the love of the microphone, and bam, it was the good old days.
Let me ask you a question. Well, first let me say what I would tell somebody if they, and people actually have asked me, I tell them to become a comedian first. And become a bad comedian. Become a bad comedian first. And it's like, and then, you know, radio, you have carte blanche to get into radio and do whatever you want to do. And, you know, the whole thing with any black entrepreneur is bring the audience. That's the key. You come in with, you know, a few people, you have a lot more control. So I'm not going to mention any names specifically, but we know who the most successful people in radio are. This whole thing with Clear Channel and iHeartRadio, and now Radio 1's getting into some external ventures, CBS. I don't quite understand how corporations are able to do the things that they're doing today. My greatest concern is that all the middlemen are going to be eliminated. And I think the DJs, record reps, the few that are left, I think that radio is working towards a formula where they deal directly with the labels, and everybody else is gone. Do you guys agree?
I can see some partnerships going that way from what we've been seeing, absolutely.
I mean, definitely. I mean, the evolution is real. We've seen the labels merging and shrinking. We went, you know, somebody asked me the other day to get them some CDs. I was like, nobody's got CDs in years, you know. I mean, evolution, they have to find a way to cut the budget. And do the labels spend excessive amounts of money to make records? And, you know, they've cut down video budgets. But, you know, it's only natural that they have to keep streaming, you know, and cutting down a lot of the waste. And there's a lot of waste in the music industry.
How important do you think social networks are to the industry right now?
I think that is it's incredibly important, probably more important than what we used to know as the diary. Equally as important, well, I'm not going to say equally as important as PPM, the actual people meter, but those are people who are right there who can give you instant, an instant review or an instant dish. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll just literally right there. That's like your audience just right at your fingertips. You're not thinking about what they look like, they're literally right there. So to me, anyone who doesn't really embrace it is probably underperforming.
And you know, the PDs that I've talked to have said that it's almost impossible to find someone who is internet savvy and at the same time, or social network savvy and at the same time, radio savvy.
You're listening to Radio Facts Radio from RadioFacts.com.
Got to get that fresh blood. It's a lot of kids out here who have that skill set. Mm-hmm. You gotta keep that fresh blood in. And I mean that not just for radio, but for record labels. It's like, you know, we're recycling the same people. And yes, that's great because there's something that comes with, you know, coming from, you know, the history of this thing.
Right.
But there are new kids out here. There's new talent out here that are embracing things, that can show you things. And sometimes we're too insecure, too unafraid. We're too very afraid to have somebody new and fresh come in because, you know, you don't want to lose your style. You don't want to challenge them. And they can actually see, they can help you. You know what I'm saying? The person, the person who is a great leader is not somebody who's holding it all and who does it all. There's somebody who knows how to pick and hire great talent, who knows how to manage them, knows how to direct them, who knows how to build that team and make it work. So I just think that there are people out there who are extremely internet savvy, who have that thing hands down, and who has a great skill set that can translate into radio, but we don't always give those people chances.
But that also says something about our generation. And I mean, it's like when I did radio, when I started, I made sure I did a bunch of things. So I'd do maybe 5 or 6 things, from radio to writing to, being a program director to an editor. I sang when I first started. So it's like the list goes on and on. But does that not speak to our generation and the fact that we have not diversified ourselves enough?
I wanted to thank my guest, Paul Porter, the poetess, Jamila Muhammad, and Dwayne McCleary for the first episode of Radio Facts Radio. I know that I cut it short. There's actually more to this show, but I definitely wanted to get your opinion and get some input from you as to what you think of the show, what you think we could do to add to it, subtract from it. I'm really dedicated to making this happen, so feel free to email me, Kevin@radiofacts.com, for the Radio Facts Radio show. Thanks.